This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, Johnny G, standing 6'2", 300 and something pounds, from the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island. It's John Gabris. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine. Abortion is healthcare. Slightly more topical than you as a character. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, my newly assigned co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Big time psych. I am not in the High and Mighty Studios. I am in the HeadGum Studios. And joining me in here, live in the studio, first time guest, long time fan of his. He's a stand-up comedian, or a comedian. His name's Joe Quazala.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, bud.
Hi. Sorry, I'm going to need a cold compress and an inhaler, and I'll be back in a few minutes.
I understand that. Get you some machinery hooked up to your all the orifices on your body.
Give me the Vader fucking hookup, the Bacta tank. I'll be back. I'll be back in a little bit. Joe, thank you for coming on High and Mighty.
I'm so happy to do this. And what appears to be a rare in-person thing.
I've really adjusted to a lazy life of just smoking weed. But you asked if we want to do in person. I have a new car, and I was excited to try driving. So
you showed it off. I
happened to pull up alongside of you on the road, mm-hmm. which was baller.
It seemed way cooler than I think anything you were expecting to be doing.
I almost honked, and I was like, that's brutal to like, but I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Joe. You cut a specific silhouette.
Yeah, I have a specific haircut and frame.
Specific haircut.
As do you.
Yeah. Turns out a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
We're all individuals.
Interesting.
But I was just about to say before we started rolling, so I want to say it on mic. Big fan, obviously. First found you through Colin retweeting a previous guest of the podcast, Colin Crawford, retweeting a bunch of your videos that you put out around your birthday. And that was a fucking riot.
Thank you.
But then I also watched your stand-up, and the obviously one of my favorite bits, and I feel like it's one of your most popular bits, is the Catholic priest.
Yes.
That shit.
Thank you.
As I grew up Catholic, obviously, that shit hit so fucking hard. We always used to get in trouble as kids because our priest, there was like a moment where like through him, with him, in the unity of the Holy Spirit, that one. Me and my brothers would get in so much trouble because we'd be like, through him, with him, deep inside of him, releasing your seed at the feet. Like we would just do all that. And my mom would be like, shut up on the drive home.
Right.
But hearing like roasting Catholic mass was something that was very specific and it was really nice to hear.
It felt like years of that being pent up, you know, because you have to be quiet in church.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's the worst, but sometimes it's the best, because when you get like the church laugh going, it, like maybe nothing is more potent of a laughter experience than like, you cannot laugh. You're with like your brother or like your friend, maybe, and like who's sitting in front of you, and like you have a laugh going, but it can't come out because mother is here.
Oh, dude.
And God. And Jesus is watching you. And so you really can't get it out, but like you start to like convulse and you're laughing because it's not even, usually not even something that's that funny, but it's the circumstance of where you are.
Oh, yeah. It's just the second of like, well, it's just like you're like, oh, no, I'm wearing sweatpants. Don't get an erection. And you're like, fuck, I instantly got one when I thought that. Like, whatever you're trying not to do in the moment, your body's like, okay, pal.
Here we go.
And I've told this story on the pod before, I think, but you just, like, on Easter Sunday, my dad worked nights. My mom is the religious one, so my dad was never around for church. My mom took me and my two brothers to Easter Mass, and my youngest brother farted. And it was loud enough that we were like, people heard it, and we were like,
right,
trying not to laugh the whole time, tears pouring down our face, and my mom's like, knock it off, you know, the teeth talk, knock it off,
makes it worse.
Yeah. And then you can't stop, and then we finally calm down, and my middle brother, who's a freak as well, he just goes with his mouth and we fucking explode. A woman comes over, asks my mom, could you please calm your kids down, it's Easter. And we can't stop. It's just, we're broken. And now we're like relishing in the power of other people kind of stressed about it.
Uh-huh, right. That one
it turned a corner where we're like, all right, we're already in hot water, but it's fun. Like, we're upsetting other people. And now it's getting fun.
Yeah.
Like,
now you control the fate of the mass.
Yeah. We got the power now. It's like a fucking, like when, like a dog grabbing your shoe. It's like, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Oh, bitch,
you're the leader.
Yeah, exactly. And so we have to leave mass. And my dad works at night. He gets home at midnight. And my mom's like, when your father gets home, he will talk to you about this. And we just laid in bed, three separate bedrooms going, it's 1140. It's 1144. And then we're like at midnight, we're like, we all pretend like we're sleeping. My dad, not going to go into the rest of the story because the story goes from funny
dark.
If you think, wait till your dad gets home to talk to you about this means just a talk.
Mm-hmm. It was a nice connecting moment between you and your father. You both learned things about each other and then moved on as developed people.
It was truly our fucking like Full Metal Jacket moment. He like lined us up in the living room and like berated us. And we were like three boys in our pajamas on Easter Sunday getting fucking whacked on the ass one by one.
Good Christ. Did you guys do morning mass or did you do?
We did the Sunday. My classic fucking, I'm 40 something. So I grew up in the 80s and 90s. I did mass every Sunday in a karate gi because we would go straight from Taekwondo to the bagel store to mass, which is like the most Long Island phrase you've ever heard.
I love that. Yeah.
I'd be in like a gi with my New York Giants starter jacket over it.
No change of clothes, not even put on a pair of slacks or...
No, it actually never came to us that we should change.
That's great. Yeah. I love that because I feel like other families, it would have been like, okay, you're going to have a humiliating like 30 seconds where you have to get out of your gi and get into your church clothes in the car while people are watching the parking lot.
Yes, exactly. While all the priests are at the window.
Cause rubbing their hands and licking their lips? They must be thinking of something else. Probably the Eucharist.
Ah, the body of Christ. Yes.
Of Christ. Yes, yes, yes. Good save. So glad we called it the body. So when we mutter the words the body, we could say of Christ and be in the clear. Oh, the body of Christ. Of Christ, of course. Oh, yes.
We had a priest from Africa that was doing mass for a couple of years, and he pronounced Jesus kind of like this. Jesus. And we could not get over it as kids. We would be like, at home, be like, Mom, can you pass the Jesus Christ? My mom's still crazy religious, and she just stuck with no one. And my mom is crazy religious in, like, the boomer way. Like, she never misses mass, but she doesn't, like, live a Christian life where she like helps other people or anyway or anything
takes
like.
Sits there for an hour every week, takes nothing out of what you're supposed to, and then goes home and lives a hedonist lifestyle. Right.
And then says things like, well, say a little prayer, and you know, like about so-and-so's cousin got diabetes, say a little prayer. And I'd be like, Mom, I'm truly anti-Catholic. I'm not even
right.
Like,
yeah, it's not even like I'm a passive. Last. Yeah. Jesus. Right. I had a different experience, which was I then learned retroactively that my parents are agnostic. And like they were going through the motions because they felt like they had to. Like they still had the Catholic guilt of like we have to take our kids to mass. And there's like my mom definitely like she grew up with nuns as teachers, like that kind of thing. Like, you'll never be able to, like, fully take it from her. But they don't go to church anymore.
Interesting.
Which, like, when I found that out, I was pissed. I was like, we didn't have to? I thought this whole time. They were like, well, we needed you to be raised with something. Which I think in the 90s is probably true.
Yeah, and also, I do think a part of me having to do something besides school for 1 hour a week that I hated. Mm-hmm. Was like one of those like learning things. Like everyone's like just wants to give their kid everything they love, right? But I think having to sit for an hour with something that's absolutely stupid and boring is like kind of. I would sit there and brainstorm the wildest things. Like this is fucked up now that I'm going to say this, but I would like imagine if I was a superhero or like a Navy SEAL guy, how I would like destroy the entire. I'd be like, you'd have to set charges here and here. Yeah, like crazy.
Here's how I would demolish this place. No bodies left standing in the church.
That's how I'd kill everyone here. What are you writing in your notebook? Nothing.
Jesus, the body.
Jesus. I think you're right. I think we needed it back then.
And yeah, and there's, I remember making fun of a kid on the playground because he said he didn't believe in God, which is like fucked up. And like, obviously later it's like, oh yeah, yeah, no, he was right.
The kid was right. That was,
but like when you're like, I guess my parents just didn't want me to be that kid where it's like, what church do you go to? And it's like, none. And right. then you get pushed over. All these church-going kids learning good lessons of berating and punishing the non-believer.
Not a big Jewish population in Pittsburgh?
There is. Not exactly. There
like
were,
in your neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. Not like there were, but like there are very, like my brother lives in a place called Squirrel Hill, which is like a very Jewish neighborhood in Pittsburgh. But like it was, to me, growing up, like outside of the kid who didn't believe in God, and I don't know if it was maybe the 90s, like, you know, Tommy Pickles is Jewish. Like, it didn't occur to me that it was, like, anything worth noting.
Right. Well, yeah, it was kind of just like, oh, church or not? Like,
yeah,
you
like,
know,
you go like, to a Jewish church, like, what,
right.
was,
and
what
it's
I
like
would
no,
say.
Yeah, it's like no different. You just have to do an hour on the weekend that's different.
Like, no different than, like, okay, whatever Methodist is with this church or whatever.
Right, right.
Lutheran, I don't know. Like, all these things are your own thing. We have... yeah, we're Catholic, and it didn't. What, you know, it wasn't until I went to Notre Dame where I was like, oh, people have very strong opinions.
I'm not that Catholic.
Yeah, that was 100% what I learned quickly going
Holy
to that
shit,
school.
Holy shit, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone that went there, but I've met thousands of people who are huge fans of it. Like,
yeah.
I don't, it's a weird college like that.
It is. Well, because
my brother-in-law is a diehard Notre Dame fan, drives there once a year, and he went to school in Pennsylvania.
No
he
connection.
Went to York. Yeah.
No connection to the school. Very, but like when I chose to go there, I was kind of thinking like, people love this place. So will I. I didn't realize like you kind of weirdly have to be like born into loving it, and you are like indoctrinated into loving it, and then you go and you're like, I love it. But that was not my experience. I was like, I'll go and love it like everybody else. And I was like,
oh no. Yeah, I went to a Catholic college, weirdly enough,
yeah.
too. I went to a Franciscan brothers school in the Hudson Valley in New York called Marist. And it was like one of those things where I was like, I went there being like, oh, it's a Catholic school. That's going to be weird. And then I went there and it was like, nope, this is no one here is for here for the Catholic part of it. I mean, there's like probably a dozen students who are here for that. Everyone else is just from the tri-state area, and their parents sent them to a Catholic high school.
I had the opposite. Going in and being like, I'm Catholic, the other students will be like me, a person who kind of thinks it's bullshit.
Right, right.
Like was raised being like, this is all very funny. And then they will be like me and like will be similar, but it was, people went there because they were extremely Catholic. A lot of prayer on campus.
Not cool.
I hate that. I mean, like, God bless.
I was on campus on 9/11 and no one prayed.
No, I mean, like, a lot of lighting candles at the grotto is Notre Dame. And, like,
A lot of butt fucking.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I will say the most Catholic thing that happened in college is that
anal sex.
I had a sex with a girl. My first time having sex with this girl. She said she hadn't had any sex but butt sex at this point.
Right.
And I was
your
like,
butt can't be a virgin.
Right.
Because
it's like this weird virginity loophole. And I was like, that's crazy to me.
That was always like, what do you believe?
Yeah, could you imagine God's like, and of course, if you take it in the can, it's cool by me. Premarital butt stuff? Let her rip.
Yeah,
dog.
Go off, King.
Ecclesiastes 25:25. Let her rip, brother.
Yeah. Fucking fire away. Get nasty with it. John 4:20.
Jesus Christ, man. But was Notre Dame like moving to a town in college? Like it just, I don't know many people that went to huge fucking schools like that.
Yeah,
is
no.
It just like,
I mean, it was a very strange experience. I mean, like it's all... A lot of colleges are like this. It's all on campus, right? Yeah. So, you know, it was South Bend, Indiana, but, like, nobody was really hitting the town.
Yeah, no one was like, we got to see in the Indiana scene. It was like...
Yeah.
Even in, like, in my school, it was a small property, but, like, there were 7 bars that were pretty much exclusively kept alive by
the
college
students.
Kids.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So it... And also, like, I came from a public school, and, like, that... there were other kids like that, but it just felt like a prep school, for like private school kids. And Jesus truly was everywhere. Like literally, I think every classroom has a crucifix somewhere, big or large, big or small. And then the famous, like on the library is the touchdown Jesus.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, there's a lot to unpack there with like our place of where the books are. We have Jesus throwing up his hands like, huh? Who are you going to believe? Me or the books?
I got one book for you, pal.
And like the former president of the college, I might be getting some details wrong, but I feel like this was the truth. The former president, who was like this, like the most famous, I don't know, president of Notre Dame, like lived at the top of the library, or at least he spent a lot of time up there. He had like his office at the very top. And like
that's some Voldemort level shit.
Yeah, right. Like sitting atop the university, like he's not really in charge anymore, but he's rubbing his hands.
It's like
he's in the shadows.
The dude in Braveheart, his like face is all fucked up at the tower, pulling strings from behind. It, shit.
Yeah, the
Robert the Bruce.
The comparisons are bone chilling. But yeah, no, it was. But you know, at the same rate, it was like I could find my tribe kind of easily because you just kind of look around at like. Who's not into it?
Yeah,
you know, like who's not at the games, not at the football games, because like it's a ghost town on campus.
And so yeah, it's like oh shit, improv practice is at the same time as the football game. These are my peers. Yeah. Well, because big school like that casts a wide enough net, it's bound to scoop some fucking you know misfit freaks that 100%. You might be able to get along with.
Yeah,
that's pretty. Yeah, I found an improv group at my school made up of like a bunch of weirdos who were like, "Have you? Oh, you've never listened to The Roots or De La Soul, you know?" And I was like, completely like that was my eye opening thing was just meeting 21-year-olds with taste, and it was just like really and who were like funny and thought Kids in the Hall was cool.
Right,
like, that was like eye opening to me. Yeah,
yeah. Sadly, the improv group at Notre Dame was. Not cool, but
I mean, we weren't cool.
similarly, though, one of my best friends I met because we both went to the improv group to check it out, and we both locked eyes like, what is this bullshit?
Yeah, hell yeah,
still one of my best friends to this day. Do you know Anthony Gio?
Yeah,
it's him. Yeah.
Renowned improviser.
Yes, no, which is funny because he came back to improv and was very good at it. But at the time, we were like, I didn't know him, he didn't know me, and we just like raised an eyebrow, like, what are these nerds up to here? And then, yeah, we went off and...
It's a powerful feeling when you've always felt, and I hope I'm not projecting too much onto you, but like when you've always felt a little dorky and nerdy, and then you meet like a full tier below you that you're like,
I'm an alpha.
Okay, a cappella. Thank you for making me feel heroic.
Right, and strong and virile and yeah.
But when we were talking about a topic, you mentioned hosting.
Yeah.
Which is something I do a shit ton of. So this was like very thrilling for me because even the way you phrased it, it's like, yes, we've hosted game shows, live shows, this, travel shows, whatever, podcasts, but also I enjoy hosting people at my place.
Yeah, me too.
And that's something I got from my wife over, like, we've been together for 20 years. She was always like that. My family was always like, we're gonna order a 6-foot hero. People should come over. We'll fill the cooler with beers.
Mm-hmm.
My wife comes from a family where it's like, I've been cooking for 48 hours and leading up to having 6 people over. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So to me, and I've learned that over, and
I have an Italian mother.
Yeah, so exactly.
I know exactly what you mean.
So hosting has become something that's really fun. And like as a team with my wife, like she calls it camp counselor energy. I like to like do what I do well in hosting is not necessarily setting the table or cooking, but it's like, I think this would be a fun drink pairing. You know, like I do like goofy. So it was curious when you said that, what made you want to talk about hosting?
Well, it just feels like, there is the thing you just said. I love hosting a party, and I'm lucky to have a place that is good for a party, both in that it happens to have like a big yard.
Hell yeah.
But then there's also like the kitchen is big enough. People at a
people
party
always hang out in the kitchen.
Love to go to the kitchen, and I've got the setup, and I don't live in like a big house, but like just our kitchen happens to be large enough that it's really conducive. It feels cozy if people are in there hanging out, but it's not like cramped, so it's impossible.
Right. It can have the importance to like a hosting kitchen is big enough that I can have a handful of people in there and someone can come in, get something out of the fridge,
yes,
and not there's make an anyone easy else move.
Pathway yeah. to the resources.
That's a party kitchen if you can be like six people hanging out in there and be like, oh, what do you need? Mm-hmm. I got you. Mm-hmm. Like that that kitchen energy. And there's something as a kid when you would when parties would be hosted at your house, it would be like maybe the women would be in the kitchen, but then at some point as the part like it would go on, it would be like, what are these? Why are there five grown-ups in the kitchen this whole time? And they're the loudest people here.
Right, yeah.
And then you go in there and your uncle's got like a bottle of Jaeger in the freezer or whatever. And you're like, oh.
They derive power from the kitchen.
Yeah. They get volume and energy from the kitchen.
But my relationship with my girlfriend is that she loves to, I don't know if she loves, but she definitely gets into setting up. She likes to set up the party and hang like string lights around the house,
yeah,
get everything ready, and then we like tag team. I take over. She gets high, sits at a table with her friends while I am bopping around.
Checking on everybody, yes, making sure it's going well.
Yeah, I take over when the party happens. And I love being able to like do-si-do around the house in the yard and just like jump into a conversation, make sure everybody's happy, make sure I've seen everybody. Maybe connect people if they don't know each other, but they're both from like Boston or whatever. Be like, yeah, you guys should talk. And then just I like doing that, being mobile, making sure people have the snacks they need, making sure the weird YouTube I put on the TV is playing.
Yeah, it's all shit. We've been on an ad rotation. Skip ad, skip yeah, ad. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, make sure the music is loud enough. And yeah, my girlfriend Haley is just, you know, high as a kite at a table. Her responsibilities are
yeah, she's
done.
Like, I did all the work you wanted me to do, right? Maybe I'll help you throw some cans in recycling at the end of the night, but for now I'm posted up at this table mm-hmm. talking mm-hmm. to other. I am both of those people at parties, which is pretty rad. Yeah. Funny, I will say, like, hosting a party lets you get that little bit of social anxiety I used to get about being like stuck talking to someone at like an event. Like I'd be like, not even if I'm not enjoying it, but I'm just like, shit, I've been with like this one person for like 40 minutes. Am I eating their time? Do they hate this? Should I be talking to more people? I have other friends here. I have more stuff I want. Right. So that shit like escalates in my, and you, it like makes me uncomfortable. But when you're hosting, you always have an out.
Always have an out.
But, and then you get like, not only do you always have an out, you like arguably also always have an in. Like
this
if you walk past like three people talking, they'll be like, "Joe, mm-hmm. dude, great, yeah, it's so fun, man. I was just talking, we're just, you know, mm-hmm. like," and it lets you just kind of. And if you're a comic, if you like to make people laugh, you get like full blown like shark energy. Like you like yes. walk over to one school of people, bah, kill,
yeah, la 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 la, bada bing, bada boom, yeah. and they're like, "We love you," and I'm like, "I gotta go,
I gotta go." I'm actually gonna reuse two of those bits in yeah. six other conversations.
I'm workshopping this with throngs of people throughout the party.
I'm saving it for Adam McKay is standing over there. I'm gonna go to him last with my when my bits all squared away.
But it's also like you got to invite everybody. It's like a party where, like, you chose who is around there for the most part. Like, there's always people who come by, but, like, yeah. the bulk of it is like, oh, yeah, the people that I don't want to run into,
they're
didn't invite
here.
Them. They're
yeah,
not here.
Exactly.
And so that's, like, the other benefit of hosting is, like, oh, yeah, I can go to this party. I'm like, I'm going to go run into this fucker. It's like, not at my party, baby.
That's, and I something else I pride myself on, I usually throw a sort of, like, cartoonishly large birthday event of some sort mm-hmm. and invite. My friends are very disparate. Whilst, of course, I have a shit ton of comedy friends, mm-hmm. I've just been so gregarious for so long that people in my orbit are like from a lot of different, and been with the same woman forever. So her friends are my friends. So it'll be like at a birthday party of mine, it'll be like five famous comedians, five unknown comedians, five gay male marketing executives, five, you know, like five women uh-huh. from the floral industry, five rugby players that have since moved to Los Angeles that I used to know from New York, five white trash kids from Long Island that I'm still tight with. And it would be like, just the vibes are off. and I'm like, okay. And you know, like my brother was living out here for a little while. He's like 8, 9 years younger than me. So he was coming to a few parties over the last couple of months. And it would be like, him and his girlfriend are nurses. And I'd be like, you're the only job here that I can describe to everyone at this party. Everyone else,
understand,
I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, she works at a creative agency as a photographer or in the photography department or something? And I'm like, my brother is a nurse. And it's like, right. Oh, meet each other. Cool. Hi, later.
Great, yeah. The website for her company says they develop solutions.
I'm not positive what it's for.
Okay.
But she seems to make insane money, and she's expensed two dinners that I've been out with her to. So she's Gucci. She's in the wheelhouse forever.
Yeah. It's almost like throwing your own like mini wedding.
Yes. Well, I was thinking about it too. It's sort of like, and if you're a fucking lightly narcissistic or a comedian, it's like throwing a show in a way where mm-hmm. you're like, oh, fuck, yeah, this should be the section where this happens. You know, like you build out, you're like, wait, let's not bust out the watermelon margarita mixture until this time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're building it out like it's a performance where you're mm-hmm. like, it's going to maybe hit a lull. People aren't really going to, it's not going to be fully going until this time. So this is when the cake should come out. This is when we should offer the Jello shots or mm-hmm. whatever. Yeah.
You mentioned like a 6-foot party sub. I've done the Big Papa before.
Is that the?
It's the gigantic pizza from Big Mamas and Big Papas.
The one that comes like on the roof of the delivery car. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. We've done that before as like the centerpiece of the party. Like at one point, Papa's showing up. And what was great is I kind of forgot about it because I was like, oh, that's funny. We're going to get this big pizza. It's going to be crazy. We ate it within 5 minutes. There were like enough people. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's what this is for. It's not just a sight gag. They right. get fed a lot of people very quickly.
We've all been there, rummaging through pipes, dodging man-eating Venus flytraps, grabbing coins, fighting hammer-slinging turtles, wearing cute little overalls. A tiny little hat, stumbling upon polka-dotted mushrooms, eating them, turning into giants, and going on full-blown rampages. Schedule 35 is kind of like the Super Mario mushroom, but for your mind. We send you precisely measured microdoses of psilocybin that you can take to enhance your daily vibes without seeing. Well, man-eating Venus flytraps, thank God. Maybe it's, I mean, it is a mushroom, so the parallel works good, but it is also kind of like the star in that it gives you what you need to, like, get through your day safely. So get 15% off with your code MIGHTY, my code, it's your code if you use it, at schedule35.co, that's S-C-H-E-D-U-L-E-3-5.co. That's 15% off at schedule35.co and use promo code MIGHTY.
Being a good host also, I think, makes you a good guest.
Mm-hmm. Like, because you know what you gotta bring and how you have to operate.
Right. Yeah. You know not to like wear them down in any way. Like, you know, not to be like high maintenance in any way of like, actually, do you think I could just use your bathroom for 45 minutes? I gotta just like shower and shave real quick or whatever. Like, you know that's frustrating. And recently, my thing when I go to parties has been to bring like two cases of Liquid Death water in cans.
All right.
And pour them into the cooler. And, you know, I bring a bunch of grass as well. And I'll smoke weed and drink waters for a little while as I'm trying to limit my alcohol intake. Then I'll go to like an hour and a half in, all the Liquid Deaths are gone. And I'm like, right, parties for 40-something-year-olds in L.A.
You got to know your crowd.
People drink water. Like, and people are like, oh, cool, canned water.
I can hold a can.
Yeah.
So much of drinking is holding the fucking thing in your hand.
Dude, this is what changed the game for me was the canned water, because when I go camping, as I mentioned numerous times today since I ran into you 40 minutes ago, holding a can of anything around the campfire works. And it's like, if you're fucking got a shit in the woods in the morning, maybe you don't need 12 IPAs before bed. Like, there's no need to leave a clay mound outside of your fucking tent. Or
yeah, the Liquid Deaths and the seltzers are they're hits.
They're powerful. People love. Yeah, and I guess for listeners who aren't in their 40s in a place that has a phrase called Cali sober, like it might be a little different. You might be frowned upon if you bring actually, you know what, people always like water, even at least at the end of the night. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, but especially when a lot of people drove, it's like,
yeah, right? It's like maybe switch to two water.
Yeah,
that's always the best too. And I hope statute of limitations, but so many of my friends are like, yeah, I got to drive home a little bit. I'll just grab water. It's like, you've had 14 beers, and now you're gonna have one water in the drive.
Math.
You're gonna piss yourself.
Let's think about it. Yeah. I've also got a fire pit, which is like,
come on,
one of the great excuses to have a party. Like, we're gonna have a bonfire. Come on over,
dude. Fire, well, whilst dangerous, also, I just got to remember to tell you that it also, the lighting it emits, like the kind of moving lighting, like, and the orange ember glow of a fire, it really is. I'm gonna say ambiance, but now that it's 2023, I should use the word vibes,
mood.
Yeah, it's really rich, like an open flame. Like, we do a bunch of candles in our little tiny ass apartment, but like a big open, a fire pit in the summer with your shirt off and a beer in your hand is like a fucking dream.
It really, it's magical. And it's another thing, like, the reason my girlfriend gets high is like she can get a little anxious that she doesn't know what to be doing at the party. But when there's a fire, she likes becoming the fire girl.
Oh, and if just you like, can get a job,
right? While,
like, that will, like, when I'm at my like in-laws, I'm like, I'll refill the ice of the cooler every time it gets low. And mm-hmm. they're like, thank you, John. Like, you know, you can become like, yes, you find a niche.
It's a thing
that
of like being a host, being a good guest.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I've replaced the trash bags at a party once. And the host was like, dude, thank you. Yeah, right. Like, just like the easiest thing in the world. But like, yeah. You just know, like, this is full. The rest of the party is going to be playing Tetris, trying to put their can in some negative space that's not really there. And it's going to create like this pile.
Yes,
and
yes.
Like, we all know to just what to do. But I think there's also maybe a sense of like, oh, but I don't. It's
that might be overstepping.
It's like,
yeah.
It's like every like they will kiss your feet if you take the trash out for them,
right.
Especially if you know where the garbage bags are, which is like, you know, you don't have to.
That's king. Yeah, I'm because I was a bartender for so long and an alcoholic at bars for so long. I have like such a thing of like, all right, I'm heading in the direction of the recycling bin or whatever. I'll be like, check like 7 cans. And if they're empty,
yeah.
I'll grab them, squeeze them, crush them, throw them in there. And then take the bag and throw it in my car and get 5 cents for each can.
And collect. And then I collect.
And then I'm earning. You put that in a certificate of deposit, 5% over 18 months.
This is hustle mindset. This is grind culture. This is why we do it.
I go to parties, and while you're sitting there spending money, fucking hanging out with your friends, talking bullshit, I'm grinding.
I'm counting nickels around the bar saying, dime, quarter.
Do we have enough beers for the guests? I don't know, but we certainly have enough cans for me to start an investment. Let's go.
I put it all into Ethereum, and then I just watch it grow
just
and grow to the moon.
Skyrocket. Promo code Mighty. Well, now, were you always into hosting? Was that something like, because there is early on in life, it's early on in like your partying years, it definitely feels better to go to someone else's party because mm-hmm. it just feels like maybe you still live at your parents, or maybe you're in like a rental early in your life, or you're like in a 5 people live in one house situation.
Right,
we don't
right.
necessarily, no one agrees on when we should have parties or whatever. Like that, have you always been into it? Did you?
Yeah, pretty much as soon as I remember throwing a party in my dorm room.
Yeah.
just because I there's like practical things beyond the things we already said, which is like, you curate the guest list. Like, that is great. Like, I like hanging out with my friends. Like, bring them all here. Like, it,
right.
that's at its basic level. But also, like, I can get the bar experience and then change all the things I don't like about that.
Yeah,
like,
it doesn't have to be as crowded. You pick the music.
The volume, the lighting. And then just like, oh, instead of me wasting, you know, $50 to $100 on drinks for me and my friends, I could do that and then supply the entire party for the entire night for everybody.
Yeah, for $50 to $100, we can all drink for the whole night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that, especially in like my cheaper days, it was like, no, I don't want to go. I hated spending. It just, especially moving to Chicago and then going from Chicago to LA, it was just like, oh yeah, PBR $7. Like, what are you? I can get,
and a case of it is 13.
Yeah, right. And so it just felt very practical. Of like, I don't have a lot of money, but we can have a way better party and like get drunk on the same amount of money that I would spend like on myself or two people.
Yeah. And also, especially once you're like in a relationship or not trying to hook up, like the bars lose like one full tier of interest.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, now that I'm not single, dancing sucks. Like, now I can just make out with my girlfriend. I don't have to like dance to five songs with her before I can kiss her.
See if
like,
I can catch a vibe.
So like that's how I got into parties early on in college, would be like, I don't want to go to the bar. My girlfriend, who's now my wife, weirdly enough, was like, oh, she's working tonight. I'm like, I don't want to go to the fucking bar. She'll come over here at midnight. Oh, well, what if we have a party? And then we would like throw a party, and we lived on Sunset. And so everyone called us the Sunset Boys. I'd be like, the Sunset Boys are having a party. And like that phrase gave me enough juice to like want to throw parties all the time.
You have a brand.
Yeah. And then we were like, the Sunset guys are throwing a bash. It's like, we slip and slide one time. Another time we painted all our walls chalkboard and told everyone come in and go ham. We had huge beer pong tournaments with like elaborate rules. Mm-hmm. And something I'm connecting now kind of on the fly is like talking about like, oh, like hosting a party can be like planning a show. I guess what I really mean is, if you have any like self-producing experience, like someone who makes their own sketches or does live comedy and does once you have that energy, like if you've ever planned a party with someone who works as an actual like line producer or TV producer, it's fucking awesome. They are like Excel spreadsheet of like, no, we only need 16 cases if we're having 40 guests, but in case we have 48 guests, we can have. And you're like, what the fuck?
We're
and it's like
another level.
I'm just running numbers all day, every day.
Right. Yeah.
I get that. You get that energy a little bit of like, oh yeah, like I know what would be fun, and like the comedy guy in me gets fucking juice off of like, I did this dumb thing that people are enjoying.
Yes. It's this almost same thing of like doing stand up or doing live comedy. It's like I said a thing and it brought joy to people, and I am high off of that. And there's parallels to the party experience. And also I liked feeling like the Chicago comedy scene was like pretty tight knit. And when I moved to LA, I felt those moments the most at house parties.
Right.
And it was, and you know, when I first moved here, there were some guys who would throw house parties, like big ones, that felt like everybody went to. And like, I had moments with people who became my best friends just because of that energy that like we were like craving. And it's also just like, you get to fuck around and kind of see these people who you are only seeing at shows, and you kind of have to be quiet, or you have to like go outside or whatever. Right. But like, this is the thing, like come and goof off with all these funny people.
Yeah. Oh, it's a fucking dream. House parties have like a different vibe than a bar. Even if you know everyone in the bar, even if you invited every single person into the bar, being at a house party just has a vibe where you're like, am I going to sit on the couch for like an hour and get blasted? Like, you can't do that at most bars. And it's like that moment where you sit at the table with your girlfriend high as fuck and just like fucking look at something on your phone together for like a half an hour. Like the opportunities for those kind of weird house things. And then you like go outside and it's like, oh, these guys are throwing hammers. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, there's always like,
shit, I'll grab one.
Yeah. Fuck,
how far are we
doing
this?
Hammers? Yeah. I have a very distinct memory of college comedy festival at Skidmore College. There was a house party, and in college you're pretty good at house parties. You're a comedy guy who's at like a party school. You have fun. You go to a party at a house party made up of exclusively comedian kids from all over, from all different schools, very levels of nerdy. You find some freaks that you like connect with. And I'm going to say a positive connection I had and a negative connection I had. Positive connection: I met my friend Brandon Gardner because he was the only other guy like over 6 feet tall at this party. Like, and he was like super buff. And we were like, someone was
still brother.
Yeah. Someone was like bullying this like dorky kid that we thought was really funny. And him and I both were like a non-comedy guy at this party. We were like, hey, pal, fucking not leave Minnie Rivers Cuomo alone. And we like put our, like, that was the nickname we had for this little glasses kid. We put our hands on, we like looked at each other. We're like, what's up, man? I'm Gabrus. He's like, I'm Gardner. It's like, you go by your last name too? You're a giant freak. Yeah, you do comedy? Well, you're actually weirdly, surprisingly smart. Me too. Oh, yeah.
Do the forearm.
Yeah.
Bump.
We do like the fucking
Canseco, McGuire.
Bash Brothers. Yeah. But then later on at that party, I'm fucking blasted. I'm having the time of my life. I go downstairs to the basement, and in the basement is just one dude standing next to a huge armoire full of like glass containers and vases, taking them down and just whipping them across the basement into another wall where there's a pile of glass.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, yo, what's
going on? I have a few problems with that.
Yes, yes. I go down there and go, yo, what's going on down here? He's like, I'm making a glass garden. I'm not going to do an impression, but to bury the lead,
yeah.
I was like, oh, this guy's pretty fucking weird. And then in like a couple minutes, it was like a little overwhelming, but he was also like really funny. And I was like, man, this energy. That dude, DJ Miller.
Jesus Christ.
I was like, wow, yeah. Another giant freak who's like kind of an, okay. And then I was like, oh, you're like an intense weirdo like me. Oh, no, not like me.
Which part is going to make you famous? The funny thing or the destructive thing? Certainly it wouldn't be both.
It certainly would be grabbing onto two different speedboats on your jet skis and seeing which one rips the other arm off first.
that's Skidmore like festival. I never went, but I would subsequently hear a lot of people from different areas of the country talk about it my comedy journey.
I remember being like coming home and being like the one kid in the comedy group who couldn't go on the festival that weekend. I was like, dude, there was this black kid from NYU who was like one of the funniest human beings I've ever seen. That guy is Childish Gambino.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's got to be Glover.
Yeah. And I was just like, this young dude, and it's like, he was one of the few black guys at the comedy festival. I was like, he's absolutely killer. And then I was like, oh, shit.
Insane.
The most, I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll move to New York. I'll reach out to the guy. Oh, he's already on 30 Rock. Okay.
Interesting. Okay, well, maybe. But like, you can forge a relationship at a house party that you can't anywhere else. And like, I tend to be maybe a little bit in my head when I'm at a show. Like if I'm after
you perform, yeah, it's hard not to have like,
and like, you're meeting, that's how you're meeting other comedians in the scene, especially if you're new or even if you've been around. It's just like, I can't always, from my personal experience, present the version of myself I want to when I am out at a comedy show. Right. Sometimes I can, but sometimes it's just hard, or it's hard to like approach somebody who like you've seen people, like even like you and me, like we've seen each other out, right. We've never really had a conversation, but we know each other. But if you were at my house at a house party, we would talk and then have a great time.
Right, exactly. And vice versa. I'd be like, yeah, I was talking to Joe for like fucking 45 minutes. The guy's fucking Notre Dame, dude.
And so like having a house party also, like, I didn't do it intentionally, but it started to have that effect of like, oh, these people that I want to get to know who I think are funny and cool, but I'm like a little bit shy or don't know how to approach them and just be like, we've seen each other. We know each other.
Like, at a show is like work. Mm-hmm. And in a way, you're not making any money and it's taking up an inordinate amount of time. But it is like one of those things where you're like, well, is he like rushing to get out of here? Is he like in his head about his set?
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah.
Am I doing like, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I know who this person is, but like maybe I'll wait till after they go up, and then they go up and they're rushing out to it. So it like never really works out the way you want. But when it's like planted, like also some people are like, sorry, man, I'm just like running my set in my head, or like, frantic looking, where's the cowboy hat in the aquarium? You know, like whatever.
And even if they're nice about that, you're like, okay, I will never talk to this person ever again in my life.
Yeah, I will not bother you ever again. Do not worry. I'll email you about my house party, but you can say no. Please do. But when someone shows up to your house, they're also hosting a party. There is like the element of like, at some point, if I go to a party at your house, I have to make sure I say hi to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't just be like, oh, I was in the corner talking to the two guys I knew and then bounced. Like,
right. Which does happen. But for the most part, yeah, you can, someone you don't even know can show up to your house party and you can hug them.
Yeah, you're allowed to.
And that's why I do it.
I learned that from when I was an intern at Miramax.
You have to hug them. You have to put your hands on them. No, but it's you know
come
what I mean.
And hug me. You're like in the living room with your
come
shirt
to
off.
Daddy. Like suddenly have like a Star Wars voice. Like, yeah, come to daddy.
Honey, you need a hug, brother.
But yeah, it's just like, it's an immediate icebreaker of like, oh, fuck, yeah, oh my God, Gabrus, you're here. So good to see you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because hosting when you're in Hollywood has like these two definitions, right? Or has multiple definitions, but one of them is hosting a show, hosting a live. Maybe you're hosting stand-up means you're in between other acts, you're keeping it moving, and you do some time. Hosting a food show is like you're tasting food and talking to the camera. But the thing that all of these have in common is that you're yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So like, even when you're doing stand-up, you're not full. I mean, you're not fully yourself necessarily. But when you're, I'm not a good actor. I'm in this business to be an actor, but I'm not good at it. But I'm very good at being myself. I'm very comfortable as myself. Right. So I get a lot of work hosting. But then that's also why I like house parties, because it's like, what better place to be yourself than in your own fucking house? Mm-hmm. Like you're totally like that's when you feel at most home. You're like, dude, I actually hold on. I have something that pertains to this conversation. And since we're at my house, I can go get it.
Exactly. Yeah. You're hosting the best show of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's like killer. Yeah. And you're all the acts as well.
The perfect crime.
Next up, me.
But
you know him, you love him, it's me.
This next comedian, God, he's hosting the show. He's hosting he's hosting the conversation because you're listening to me right now. It's me. Hi.
It's me. Love this guy. Killer, super funny. He's going to hate that I said that, but come on out, me.
One of my best friends who just might whittle trying to tell you.
Huh? We have the exact same penis.
Believe me. Yeah, but hosting, like, yeah, because I have hosted a lot of stand-up, and it's a thankless job.
Yes.
And it sucks. And it is also, it tends to be, especially in, like, a club setting, it's given to the least experienced comedian. They're paid the least. And
they have to be there the whole time.
They can't bounce. Sometimes they have to go on after the headliner, which I, like, if I'm ever in that position, I'm sometimes like, you can wrap it up, and I think people will be happier.
Yeah, I don't think people are like, I need 8 more minutes of lukewarm stand-up.
Because, or if it's just like they need me to go up just to be like, wow, what a show. Okay, goodbye. Sometimes the club needs you to say things about how they should exit.
Right. Wow. Goodbye. Make sure you buy t-shirts over here or whatever.
Yeah. Like, thank you for coming. We have this person next week or whatever, depending on the club.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it just, man, it sucks. And also, there's a lot of comedians who can't do it and shouldn't do it. Based on their persona or whatever, you're just like, I don't want to see this person whose whole thing is they don't want to be here. I don't want to see them host a show.
Yeah, I don't want to see them try to make it work in their persona or have to, like, change their persona. Like I'm just picturing, for some reason, even though she's not a stand-up, like, Aubrey Plaza being like, keep it going for
exactly, yeah.
Tony Hinchcliffe. Let's go. Who's up next?
But, yeah, it's either, like, she stays true to herself, and the show is bad because she's not
host energy can't be that.
She's not properly hosting it, or she compromises her ideals and right. and her truth to host a good show, and you hate it because you're like, whatever you're doing isn't working. It seems false.
Yeah, right, right.
And I'm in the camp of I can host a show and stay true to myself, and it kind of sucks because you don't want to. Do it.
Right. Well, because it's just like, oh, it's like, what's an example? Like, it's like being an editor or a drummer. If you're good at it, you're like, well, I want to be the guitarist. It's like, we need a drummer.
Yeah. We need a good one so we can stay on time right. and this won't fall apart.
Yeah. I think I've hosted a few stand-up shows and I feel more comfortable hosting than I do doing time.
Okay.
I've actually thought about hosting a monthly stand-up show
where
I just host and just riff and do that because I enjoy that. And if it's my show, then I'm not at least the lowest paid guy. You know what I mean?
Like, oh,
I
sure.
Could,
yeah.
I could be like, everyone gets paid this and I get, earning.
The secret amount.
Right. Yeah. I get this unheard of amount.
People, stand-ups would love that.
Right.
Because they don't want to, and usually for like an independent, like local, like alternative show, the producers of the show do have to host it.
Yeah, yeah.
Occasionally, one of those shows will ask someone to do their show, and then they'll be like, could you also host it? And that, I'll just say for the record, is the worst thing to do. If you are putting a show on, you have to be the host. To put that on someone else is...
Or you have to have, like, the host locked in of, like, yeah, we produce it, but our friend who can host hosts
Who yeah. wants to host. Yeah. Yeah. You can't just be, like, someone begging for stage time or desperate for it just because it just gets harder and harder. It's like, yeah, you can do our show. Also, maybe you could host. And you're like, well, I already asked you to do the show.
Right. This and is now where you like, get an email 2 days before and be like, you're going to kill me, but something just came up. I cannot do your show because I've been dreading it this whole time hosting and... Because that sucks. If it's not... hosting someone else's show is like, that's rough. Sauce.
No one wants to do that.
No, no.
But like, if you need the stage time enough, you will do it. And also like, I've been in a position where I've been booked to be on a show that I like with producers that I respect, and the host dropped out. And it was like, who on the lineup can host? And then they looked to me and it's like, am I going to say... like, fuck off. Like,
no.
I get that they're in a bad position and like they need somebody to host and like they know that I can do it and then I probably will do it. And then it immediately puts me into a position at the bottom of the totem pole for all the other comedians. And I had this happen recently and I wanted to be like, you know, I was one of you once. I was part of the show, and now you just think I'm the host.
Right. Well, that's part of the issue, too, is that I'm not, like, one of those guys who treats a host like that. But there are people who are like, oh, the fucking host is here.
Yeah. Like, and even if they're not saying it, you just, like, kind of sense a vibe of, like, because you have to, if you're a good host, you have to go up to them and be like,
what's your name? What's your credit?
So, yeah, what do you want me to say? Yeah. Okay, great. You know, when they're getting the light, you become, like... help. You know what I mean?
It becomes like you're now like you have to go like tell and it's Kwakzala.
Right, exactly. Yeah, your status like plummets immediately. And it's just and fucking hosting is hard and it should be paid at least as much as like the feature.
If not more, because I think it's less time overall that mm-hmm. you're on stage, but it's more time overall that you're at the venue.
Yeah.
That should be the victory because one of the best things about doing stand-up and not fucking doing a 30-minute Harold or whatever is that if you do 12 minutes at one show, you might be able to do two shows in one night, but maybe you have to bounce early or come a little late.
Exactly.
And that's kind of understood in our industry.
Right,
so it's
yeah.
Like,
I mean, one of the things a good host should ask is, does anyone need to leave early? Yeah. Like, does anyone care where they go in the lineup?
Yeah.
It's like a common courtesy. And... the host does not get that luxury.
No, they do not. Dude, and I'm pretty new to stand-up. I've been in comedy clubs and doing comedy forever, but I'm pretty new to stand-up, so I'm, like, feeling out all these vibes. And I still haven't done, like, real club stand-up too frequently. But learning all this shit is, like, I'm like, oh, I think I'd be really good at hosting. And then you find out that it's not what you think. It's not as cool as you think it is. Like, yeah. You're like, no, oh, other people frown upon that. Oh, okay.
And it is such a skill. It is like every live show should have some element of hosting in it coming from some angle. Even like I was at a Q&A after a movie with like the director, and the person doing the Q&A needed like a little bit of that hosting juice up top because they didn't even say hello to the crowd. Here's who I am. Here's what we're about to do.
Yeah.
It just kind of started, which is like, okay, if you're like a cool actor who's doing it or like a friend of the director or some notable person, because they try to do that with Q&As sometimes, get like a name to do it, they might feel like they're above, or it's just, I mean, not even that, like they just, that's not how they ever operate.
Right, because they never had to
operate like that. And they have an air of coolness around them. Being a host is not cool. You have to swallow that. You just have to be like, I have to be a little bit dorky because I need to focus the crowd, tell them what is about to happen so that the thing that happens next can happen effectively.
You have to get a little bit teachery, mm-hmm. which is like maybe... causes a little revulsion deep inside of you. Where you're
for
like, oh, I do not want to act like a teacher. But if everyone could settle down, we're about to start the project or whatever,
right.
You know,
yes,
you feel like
yes.
such a fucking dork.
But like we just don't value that on a bunch of different levels, but like we really need it in everything. Like even like a good improv show, someone comes out and at the very least like gets a suggestion from the audience, right? And says, hello, here's who we are. Yeah. Here's our stupid name.
Yeah, right.
And
what's up? We are Scotchatory Tape. I think that's a real team name from back in the day. I remember.
I was gonna say that's way too good of off the dome.
Yeah, like, there was a period where there was two team names that I really liked, and I can't. And they were indie teams, even, but they were Scotchatory Tape and Tuna Fey.
Okay, sure.
I don't know why I liked both of those so much.
Yeah,
but they stuck with. They burned in my head like 25 years later. 20 years later,
they work.
Yeah.
But yeah, you need some of that energy.
That's my favorite part of doing the improv shows. I'm embarrassed because I'll be like, I'll have a good host. Like, you know, I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. Who's seen improv before? Okay. Who had a bad day? You know, you want to like loosen them up a little bit and talk mm-hmm. to them a little bit and then remind them at the end. Okay, that's all the talking you guys get to do today. Like, all right, you're done talking. We engage with you. Now yeah. you stop engaging with us once we start doing the theater part.
Right.
I love doing that. Mm-hmm. I love talking to a crowd. I like walking out to a cold crowd and just seeing if I could crack them open.
Yeah, it's tough, and it can be scary. Yeah. And that's why, as a stand-up, you don't want to do it because you basically have to do your set but get fewer laughs.
Right.
You know you because they're cold. Whereas, like, if you go fourth or third, it's like they're so warmed up, you can come out and get a hit immediately, and you feel like you're on top of the world.
Immediately into material and yeah. going off. Yeah. That as a matter of fact, What's Up Shitheads, How I Start My Podcast, started from back when I was started doing stand-up. I was like, I need something that like off-puts the audience in a way that for me would be fun to try to come back from.
Mm-hmm.
So I started coming out and just going, what's up, shitheads? How are you fucking doing today? And being like angry with the crowd and watching them take back. And I'd be like, and then just like get into it from there. It was just something that I enjoyed doing so much. And now I've been doing it for 400 episodes or whatever. I fucking hate myself. I can't believe I've been doing it this long.
Yeah, it's your prison.
Yeah, yeah, I'm trapped.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. I think and I could be wrong here, but I think one of the few things where the host is king is late night shows.
Yes. A dying art.
Mm-hmm. And I used to do a live late night talk show in Chicago. That's how I know the aforementioned Colin Crawford. He was a part of the group that did that. And I hosted it. And you feel like you are floating.
Oh, like, because awesome.
It's all host centric, and you get to do so many different things. You get to
do stand up, do interviews,
yes.
do a sketch,
yes.
do a bit, do a mm-hmm. desk bit. Like, yeah, that was always the dream. That was like my dream job was mm-hmm. like Conan O'Brien's job.
Yeah.
And then I was like,
I cosplayed as it for years in Chicago, basically.
Yeah. It's the fucking dream. And I was like, oh, yeah, eventually I'll have that job. Wait, no way. They can't hire a fifth white straight guy. Oh, wait, they can hire 12 more.
Oh, they keep doing it. Interesting. Well, when it's my time, certainly. Oh, what? It's all nothing exists anymore?
Oh, nothing exists anymore? The late night shows are on strike and audiences aren't aware? Oh, no. This doesn't...
Ooh.
This is changing things. Wait, they have 14 writers making guild paychecks every week? Sorry, don't mean to sell out everyone that's working.
Good God.
Dear God, I want one so bad. I just want health insurance.
But yeah, the late night shows, that's like, yeah, because it's not almost.
It's like a dead medium, even.
Yeah.
It's things move so fast that like having a commentary at night on things that happen during the day is not fast enough.
And as I'm thinking about it, it's funny, a late night show has a host, but it also, behind the scenes, has a second host who is doing the job of what we were talking about, which is you have the warm-up come out.
Right.
He's the one really taking the brunt, and they are the one who has to do the host work.
Get it
and
hot.
And
yeah.
sound like a teacher, and like, maybe... fucking throw candy? T-shirts yeah. and candy
Tootsie Rolls to
the crowd and take people from 0 to 100. And then when the host comes out, all the hosting work has already really been done yeah. as we traditionally think of it, and they get to be on fire.
And they have a first AD or a producer who's like, oh, and up next is, you know, Chloe Savigny. Like, they'll tell you, like, you know, you get the prep where all the stuff you have to do on your own as a host. This is making me want to host more. I'm going to throw a party / late night talk show at my house and really just ruin everyone's time, including my own.
Why is Gabriel at a desk?
I've never seen him in a suit, even at his own wedding. He does not look comfortable.
He keeps throwing to commercial, and I'm worried about his mental health.
Gaber's in a suit. He looks like an offensive lineman got a DUI.
I had something to say to Gaber's, and he threw it a commercial.
Yeah. And we'll be back with more Joe after this. And then I froze for 45 seconds in the living room.
it was strange. I'm worried, but I think I'm just going
to
leave.
He knows his kitchen's not big enough to have the desk in there, right? People are going to want to come in and get drinks at some point.
But yeah, man, I hosted a late night talk show in Chicago for a long time. And then we did a kind of, when we came to LA, I came with like a bunch of writers and comedians who had been working on this thing. And we modified it to make it like a variety show. And it was like, well, I'm going to host that. Again, because like, one, on some level, I do love doing it. But also, it's like no one else wants to.
Right.
And so it was always just my default in the group. With the late night show was great. It was like, yeah,
I'm you're like, oh, my default is the star. And then when it becomes a variety show, oh, my default is the facilitator.
Right. Yeah.
And that's cool.
I started to struggle with that because when it was the late night show, one of the things that was kind of unsaid, like we had people like Colin and very, very funny writers and performers who would do the sketches, or like we would have a character come out at the top, blah, blah, blah. But I would do all the work for the show. I would put all the tech together. I would book the guest. I would book the band. I would run the meetings. I would every bad like producer thing you have to do, I would do. Because in my head, I was like, I'm not going to make anybody do the work. But then in return, I get to host.
Right.
It's the only way I could really justify like
having the cush gig is to have to do some of the fucking sweep
bitch work.
Up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I felt good about that. And I think everybody else kind of understood it, even though it was just never really spoken. It was just like, oh, yeah, we don't have to do any of this boring shit. Joe does, but he will also get to accept the praise and the love from the audience the most.
Right, right.
But then when we went to a variety show, I was still doing all the work, but then it was like, oh, I'm like sometimes not in the show. Like I come out and I host, and like the premise of the show was we had the running order on a big carnival wheel and the audience would spin it and it would determine the running order, right? And so I would have like fun moments with them coming up, but then it would like land on a sketch and then I would go away.
Yeah. And then two of your friends would do a fun sketch. Everyone would be like, they'd kill. And
yeah.
Like, come out and be like, weren't they great? Weren't my peers really
right,
good?
Huh?
I'm sorry, I'm out here.
Yeah.
Now.
You grew to love them and now it's me again. And now we spin the wheel. Oh, it's a stand up. Well, stand up is why you came here. You'll enjoy Nick Kroll for 10 minutes as I go away and you will dread my return. Okay, perfect.
All right, that's enough, Nick Kroll. I'm the guy with no jokes really set up, and I'm afraid to accidentally tag anything he said, so let's just keep it moving.
Let me pull a name out of this hat, the one thing I do on this show, as you come up and spin the wheel. Huh?
The hosting stand-up for me, when early on, a few times I did it, I like forgot to like, you know, people's material is precious, and I'd be like, dude, I one time went to a basement, you know, like, and you accidentally, like, and then you, like, maybe make a tag on their joke, which is, like, unheard of. Like, you're not.
I would argue that it's, like, depending on the sensitivity of the comic,
right,
which a lot of comics, for as, like, fucking, like, I'm a tough guy, a lot of them are sensitive babies. But I think a cool comic would understand, but
yeah.
I know 100% what you mean. Like, I can't take my fucking joke, dude.
Yeah. I feel like if I'm going to host a show, I'm going to be like, and part of the understanding is I'm going to like,
let me do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny. Just the misunderstanding what comedians are like, just made me think of when I got first put on a Harold team at UCB, I was 22 and I was the funniest guy at my college, the funniest guy at my job as a lifeguard, the funniest guy in my family. And in the obnoxious way where I'm like, big gregarious.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm thinking like I'm about to walk backstage to like 20 guys, like 20 people.
Party
like
animals.
Me, just like a bunch of like, here we are. And I'm like, all right.
They're doing the limbo backstage for some reason.
And I walk back and it's zero Chris Farley's, all David Spade's. And I was like, oh. And I'm like backstage, I'm like, and people are like nervous because it's a show. And like Some of them are like the cerebral improvisers that I didn't even put together that existed. Or
you're
whatever.
Trying to like push the keg that you brought behind yeah, your leg so yeah. no one sees that you
I'm
brought
like,
it.
I've read the room wrong.
Anyway.
Oh, you guys have one beer after?
Oh, cool. Yeah, I found this. That was. You know, should we throw it away?
This is a fake tattoo of a keg.
I thought you guys would find it funny.
That's truly how I felt. I went backstage. I was like, yeah, not that kind of vibe back here.
Where did I put my book that I brought?
I was going through catch up as well before. I'm reading The Goldfinch as well. Joe, thanks for allowing me to host in the presence of a legendary host himself. And by coming on the pod, this was a real treat.
You do a good job of it. I mean, like, it can be, that's the other thing, like hosting podcasts, it's like you have to, on some level, keep the train moving, but you want your mind to be in riff mode, and they're not the same tracks.
No, they're not. And I have learned the only way I can really host a podcast, and when Amir fucking, however many years ago, asked me, do you want to host a podcast? I'd be like, here's the thing. It's got to be like nothing to it or else I will not enjoy. Like if I had to be like, oh, do you have any news stories that I can cut? You know, like if I had like some refillable bucket I had yeah. to do, I would blow my. So if in this instance, it's like a friend who I think is funny comes on. We decide what we're going to talk about ahead of time. Yeah. It's like, this is as much effort as I can put into podcast. That's how you get to episode 430, by the way, is yeah. just by.
And like for the listeners, for the shows you hear where the hosts have to do host stuff and keep you on track and get to the next segment and get to like whatever the point of the podcast is at each yeah. thing. And they manage to be funny while doing it as well. It needs to be like underlined how yeah. fucking hard that is.
It's like, and right now we're at the Burberry Coat of the Week, brought to you by Burberry. We're going to be talking about everyone's favorite coat from this week. And you're like, have to riff and then wedge in the thing that gets you paid or gets the show
right.
picked up. Yeah.
It's like impossible. People manage to do it and it's very impressive.
Yeah. People should give Nick Weiger, fellow HeadGum head.
I was thinking Weiger specifically.
Weiger, yeah.
Because he keeps the show on track and there's so many different segments and like you have to get to your fucking fork score.
And there's like props and like consumption that's involved. Like you have, let's everyone pass out the funfetti cookies. We got to eat them
right.
and talk about
yeah.
them.
Yeah. And manages to be so funny.
And he gets the robot spectrum-y jokes all the time, but he is also very funny.
Right.
And Mitch does everything he can to destroy
the perfect dynamic.
It's a great thing.
But you do a good job as well. Even though you try to keep it as loose as possible, you still are an effective host and very funny while doing it.
Oh, thanks. I joke that I fall directly in between Mitch and Nick.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
the joke
some
is,
experiment gone wrong.
Yeah. Mitch and Nick are the like two archetypes of podcasters. Like
yeah.
big, gregarious, funny guy, and then like spectrum-y, get the work done, intelligent mm-hmm. guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both men, of course. Both white men, of course.
Yes.
We're talking podcast.
When we talk about the spectrum of podcast hosts, it goes from one type of white guy to another type of white guy.
It's so diverse. Two different straight white guys. Well, Joe, tell the fucking shitheads where they can see your new comedy special.
Yes. So I have a new special. It's called Ooh La La. It's on.
Hell yeah.
You can find it on YouTube on Helium Comedy Studios. If you type.
Well, here's the thing. This episode will have the special will be out by the time this episode comes out. It's in the show notes right now.
Perfect.
Emma put it in the show notes. So just
thank
whatever
you,
you're listening to this on, take your phone out and click on Joe's special and give it a like, a comment. God forbid, a watch.
Yeah, you could also. What really matters is the numbers. Give it like refresh it a few times to get some watches. Give it a like. Give some comment that's really nice.
Just put it in a blind forward email. Just forward it to every one of your contacts.
Yes, for the love of God. And then if you care to watch stand-up comedy, you can watch that as
yeah.
well. But again, we have to reiterate, that's after you do all the metrics.
Yeah, if you're an important. Apple Store employee, if you can get them on all the iPads and phones playing at once today.
Put it on a loop. I don't know how to do that on YouTube, but put it on a loop. You figure that out. And then
just last week, my wife, we were at the Grove. I was super high. We were both super high. She had to go return something. I'm like, I'm going to go in the Apple Store and just like look at new computers. And instead, I subscribed to High and Mighty on every single phone in the room.
Yes.
I was like, I'm a grown man with sunglasses on, just walking around, touching every phone in this room. So the idea has been in my head of like, I should just, this is the most grassroots marketing.
It's not a bad idea. But another way, I guess, to find the special is I will be promoting it on my own socials. So you can find me at Joe Kwa, J-O-E-K-W-A on Instagram and TikTok, Joe K, Joe K on Twitter. And you can find out what I'm doing. I have a sketch album coming out soon. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Oh, that's rad.
Thank you.
Audio or visual?
Audio.
Oh, that's really fucking cool.
It's called Funny Songs and Sketches. I didn't feel like I had any room to fuck around with like a clever artistic title. It's just like, this is what it is. And I think that should be out in August. So
keep an eye out for that. Yeah. That's rad. Before I knew Joe did stand up, I was a fan of your sketch videos. You did those birthday videos that made me laugh so fucking much.
Thank you so much. And this is a version of releasing a bunch of sketches at once is release it as an album.
Yeah, one that might be slightly more lucrative or
potentially has some degree of monetization.
Can't be
involved.
Less lucrative.
Right? Losing a lot of money on making 31 sketches you release in one day? Okay, interesting. That's not
saying I could have lost more money. So this is actually a win? Okay.
All right. We'll see. Time shall tell.
Find Joe's socials. Watch Ooh La La and listen to funny sketches and funny songs and sketches or wherever the fuck. It's August, so it might not be out yet, but get pumped. Save yourself. As for me, spill my drink right at the end. Check out my other podcast, Action Boys, at actionboys.biz. It is a paid podcast, but we have some free episodes. You can find those wherever. And also, check out 101 Places to Party Before You Die, now on Max. Actually, should still be on Max, I should say. I don't know when this episode comes out. I can't promise the market works the way you want it to. But
nothing is certain.
Nothing is certain anymore. That was the thing about streamers. It's like, at least I'll always be able to watch The Office. And then it's like, everyone's like, we're taking shit off, though.
No.
Bye, shitheads. I am mighty.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy, I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's actually, it's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow,
body blow,
someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane. It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it! Come on! Do it now!